Next speaker is Al Krebs. He's director of the Corporate Agribusiness Research Project in Everett. He is editor-publisher of AgBiz Tiller Online, an internet newsletter, and the weekly email Agribusiness Examiner newsletter. Both are devoted to monitoring the activities of corporate agribusiness from the public interest perspective. He is the author of The Corporate Reapers, The Book of Agribusiness. He's a native of California and a journalist and has been a public interest advocate for over 38 years. Please welcome Al Krebs.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to spend a little time tonight talking to you about beef and bananas, which are two of the most common items that we find in our shopping carts. But I want to, before I do that, I want to take advantage of the academic surroundings and give you a quick offer you a quick little history lesson. Studs Terkel often says that we can't say where we're going if we don't know where we've been. And I think that is particularly important when it comes to issues of trade and agriculture and farming. Back in 1971, when the Nixon administration decided to let the currency float and not redeem foreign dollars in gold, why, the U.S. entered its first trade deficit, which has been mounting ever since. And in that process of doing that, they set up a Williams Commission, it was called, in terms of trying to get to the root of why we had a deficit in trade, and yet agriculture showed a surplus in export. And they set up the commission, and members of the commission include several prominent folks from corporate agribusiness, including the head of Del Monte Corporation, and also at the time the vice president of Cargill Incorporated, Cargill being the nation's largest private corporation and the world's largest grain trader. And out of that commission came a term that we've been stuck with ever since called comparative advantage. In other words, the world should be divided up into those countries that produce things that they have the advantage in producing. Well, when it comes to food, that puts the U.S. pretty far ahead of the rest. And it also divides up the labor situation to where we put the third world countries or the south countries into the labor intensive, but where we put the north into the technological age of agriculture. Consequently, we depend upon the third world countries depend upon their cash crops to get money so they can turn around and buy grain and so forth from the developed nations, particularly the United States. Consequently, with the comparative advantage working, we've got to gear our agriculture and our trade policies to conform to that. And by doing that, we have allowed ourselves to become what Henry Kissinger calls economic imperialists. So in the process of doing this, the person that drafted the recommendations, these recommendations to give to the Nixon administration, was a man by the name of William R. Pierce, who was, as I say, was the vice president of Cargill. Pierce later went on to become our trade representative and our chief trade negotiator. In the process of doing that, in 1972, Nixon's Council on Economic International Economic Policy was to develop the strategy that they were going to put before GATT to make it, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, to make it easier for the United States to exercise its power in trade. And they were successful in doing that. And they, by what they had to do, in terms of getting the support not only for farmers in this country, but farmers abroad. They had to remove that, get the price as cheap as possible so we could sell abroad, ignoring the fact that we only export about 25% of what we actually produce. So if there's ever a more classic case of the tail wagging the dog, it's in terms of agricultural exports, because we're letting the price that we're trying to set at 25%, we're letting that set for the other 75%, and in the process, we're driving our family farmers out of business. So in looking at that brief history, and it's very brief, believe me, we can see where we've come up to a point now where we encountered here a few years ago the European Union, because the European Union has always been kind of a thorn in our side because they still support their family farmers. And since the objective of agricultural policy in this country, since the turn of the century, has been to get rid of, in their terminology, excess human resources, meaning farmers, why they needed to somehow get those policies abroad so we wouldn't have to be supporting farmers abroad. Fortunately, the Europeans have rejected that and have stood by their family farmers because they realize, as we should be realizing, that the family farm is still the most efficient agricultural producer of food that we have in this world. So when the European Union, back in about 10 years, 12 years ago, decided that the beef that was being imported into the European Union was unsafe because of the hormones that were being added to the cattle here in this country, they put a ban on the beef, imports of beef. We said it was an unfair trade practice. And we took it to the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, which was the predecessor of the WTO, and we got a ruling on it that it was somewhat of an ambiguous ruling, but the Europeans kept the ban on, and they've kept it on to this very day. And as you know, if you've read the papers, that we have levied tariffs, 100% tariffs, against a lot of imports that are coming into this country from the European countries. The Europeans say that the hormones are unsafe. We say it's simply protectionism. Unfortunately, the scientific evidence is still out to lunch on a definitive decision, although the European Union Scientific Commission came back here just a couple of months ago with saying that one of the hormones is definitely carcinogenic. And we, of course, immediately poo-pooed the whole idea and said that this was just a poor science and everything. Of course, in this country, we've seen over and over again where we have the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Food and Drug Administration simply approving something and then asking questions later, and then coming to find out of the disastrous effects that some of these things that they've approved at have, but they are not around to pick up the costs. The taxpayers have to come in and pick up the costs in terms of medical expenses. So the European Union decided we're not going to have any of this. And the thing that kind of made the decision on it was one of the growth hormones that was being given to the cattle was DES. And some of you may remember DES in terms of the cancer problems that it was causing, particularly in women and children. And so they've held pretty much. We have admitted in the process that we have never tested the hormones on human beings. We've only tested them on animals. And we tend to use that rationale for our justification that the European Union is engaging in an unfair trade practices. The situation as it stands right now is the tariffs are in place. The European Union is appealing. We've appealed, and the WTO has demanded that the European Union take off the ban. The Europeans are holding fast. They're not about to give in. Now, in terms of bananas, I'd like to pass on to you something. Some of you may have seen this, but it was a documentary on PBS a few years ago, and it was called So You Want to Buy a President. And in the process, the opening of the program was very effective. And I'd like to read you just a brief excerpt from that opening script. The moderator of the program, the commentator on the program, was Robert Krulwich. And he said, some of you might have missed this on television this past fall. It was a primetime broadcast of a gala fundraiser from Ford's Theater, the place where Lincoln was shot. And in the front row is the President of the United States, and up on the stage was the comedian Paula Poundstone. And she was trying to figure out who gets to sit next to the President. Paula Poundstone, what determines who gets which seat? Do you do the whole seating chart? Do you know who's behind your head there very well? Who is that? And I must say that this whole dialogue, of course, is sprinkled with a lot of laughter and applause. The guest hostess who's seated in the audience next to the President, Carl Lindner, Paula Poundstone. Carl Lindner, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar. All right, what made you give him that seat? All right, now tell us, who is it? Hostess, a whole lot of money. And there's a lot of laughter. Paula Poundstone, a whole lot of money? Carl, I'm sure it was much deeper than that, sir. It was money and love, little buddy. Don't you worry. What's Carl's role in the community? Carl, why do you have so much money? Is that rude to ask? Sir, what do you do for a living? I know I should know, but since I don't know, would you tell me? Mr. President, do you know who Carl Lindner is? Clinton nods, yes. Paula Poundstone, would you mind telling me? President Clinton, it's a secret. Paula Poundstone, it's a secret. President Clinton, he's in bananas, sort of like you are. Paula Poundstone, he's in bananas. Is that true, sir? He's what? He's the Chiquita banana guy. Gee, sir, without the fruit on your head, sir, I didn't recognize you. Is that true? Why does the president know the banana guy? And then Robert Krulwich, the moderator, says, there's an interesting question. Why does the president know the banana guy? Well, Carl Lindner is head of Chiquita International. Chiquita International is a successor to a company called United Brands, which was a successor to a company called United Fruit Company. And anybody that knows the history of the Americas in the 20th century knows that we've been using the U.S. Marines and the CIA to impose our will and impose Chiquita Banana and United Fruit and Standard Steamship and Dole and Del Monte in Latin America and Central America. And it's just been one interest. The term Banana Republic doesn't come haphazardly. It's a very apropos term. So what happened was the European Union was bringing in bananas from basically their former colonies in the Caribbean, the Windward Islands and so forth. And Chiquita and Dole and Del Monte, the three big exporters who have close to 70% of the world market in bananas, they wanted to bring in their bananas that were a little cheaper and would undercut the bananas that were being brought in from the Caribbean countries. Now, understand the Caribbean countries' interest in this, you have to realize that 17% of their gross national product is based on bananas. Over almost 50% of their exports are in bananas. So when you take away that market, you take away a big chunk of the economy in those islands. And meanwhile, you've got the three big banana producers, led by Chiquita, who has 27% alone of the world's banana market. They're the ones that come in and take over that banana market. And the Europeans said, no, we're not. Some of the European countries said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to keep trading with these countries, help these 40 to 50,000 banana growers in the Caribbean and everything over the banana producers that the Chiquita and Dole have in the Central American countries. Consequently, when they went to the WTO, WTO said, no, you've got to revise the policy. Interestingly enough, they've gone through several disputes. I think it's the third time now that WTO says that they have to do this. But the original complaint that was launched by the United States, now mind you, the United States really has no proprietary interest in this thing. We don't grow bananas in the United States. And yet we took the side of Carl Lindner. And the day after, if you want to know why we took the side of Carl Lindner, the day after, Mickey Cantor, who was our U.S. trade representative at the time, filed a complaint with the WTO, Carl Lindner and the executives of Chiquita Banana poured $500,000 into the Democratic Party's coffers in 14 different states around the country. So in a sense, what this whole banana dispute is about, when it comes right down to the basic element, it's Clinton paying off a campaign debt to Carl Lindner. It has very little to do with what we would call a trade issue. It's just simply out and out greed. And Carl Lindner has a reputation of being, a past reputation of being one of the largest donors to the Republican Party. But he got his way with Clinton on the banana thing. So we have taken up the cause for Carl Lindner. And the justification by the WTO for even getting involved in this mess is that even though we don't provide, even though it's not an American company that's producing and exporting those bananas, it is, I say it's not America, it's an American company, that they are in a sense servicing. It's a service that's provided. And that comes under the WTO regulations of governance of by WTO. So they've been able to use that effectively. They've also, again, imposed tariffs on the Europeans for doing this. Unfortunately, it looks like there may be a compromise that's being worked out right now, the Germans being in the forefront of this, where they will give in and give the allow the Chiquita bananas to be sold to the exclusion of the Caribbean countries. The Caribbean countries, meanwhile, have said very directly to us, well, you do that, and we're going to have to rely on some other kind of cash crop. And the best cash crop we know of is marijuana. So much for Bill Clinton's war on drugs. But in a sense, it shows you basically how hypocritical this whole thing is. Not only is it hypocritical, but these basic issues that are involved in this thing are not getting to the public in general. And that's our job, is to get these issues out to the public and everything, because the media is become as bad as corporate agribusiness, and or as bad as any of the big corporate sectors, because it's all owned by the corporations, you know. And a good example of this is about a year ago, the Cincinnati Enquirer did a detailed expose on Chiquita International. Unfortunately, the reporter that did the series, Mike Gallagher, happened to steal some voice tapes from Chiquita to do the thing, and was put in jail for it and fined for it. However, in all the denials and in all the publicity that surrounded this series of articles, never once do you find in there where there was a statement by Chiquita that the facts in the story were wrong. It's simply he stole the voice tapes. And that was the issue. But that's the way the media reported it, and giving the inference to the fact that somehow this discredited the whole story. When that wasn't the case at all. And you would have thought that the media itself would be the ones that would stand up and say, well, listen, you know, sure, this guy wasn't quite ethical in how he did this, but still the facts remain. But they didn't. That isn't the way they played it. And as a matter of fact, the Cincinnati Inquirer, 2 weeks after the series ran a front page editorial apologizing to Carl Lindner and settling for $10 million when Chiquita hadn't even filed a lawsuit against them. You know, of course, it just so happens that before the Cincinnati Inquirer became a Gannett newspaper, guess who was the owner? Carl Lindner. So, I mean, those are the kinds of things that are going on all the time. And they have a direct bearing. The item that appears in most people's shopping carts are bananas. Next to that is meat. So when we see these things, we've got to understand that no longer can we just put food aside as treating it as a separate thing. It's very interconnected to the whole oppressive system that we've got in the world that's called the corporatist culture. And we've got to understand that eating has become a political act. What we eat, why we eat, and where we eat. And by doing that, by looking at alternatives, by looking at sustainable agriculture and other ideas, organic agriculture and things like that, we can develop a system. A longtime friend of mine in California used to say, what we've got here is a drunken dinosaur that's kind of wandering across the landscape. And we've got to build a cocoon or a shell strong enough that when that dinosaur decides to squat, it's going to hurt the dinosaur more than it's going to hurt us. The problem is now, the dinosaur can squat and not even know it's squatted. And that's, I think, what the issue has got to be in the coming WTO round, is we don't need any more ideas on the table about agriculture. We need to straighten out the mess that's already on the table, and we need to identify the people. As Michael Moore says, we got to start taking names and addresses of the people that are behind this. So let's keep that in mind at the end of November. And remember, the WTO comes a week after Thanksgiving. And let's make this a Thanksgiving that the American public will not forget. Well, when the European Union first set up the arrangement in terms of there was three countries that were willing to accept, two or three countries that were willing to accept what they called the dollar bananas, the Chiquita bananas, and then there were two or three other countries that didn't want to do that. And they more or less held the day in terms of that. That's why the European Union as a whole has not endorsed the thing. Now, it has been proposed that to let both bananas, in other words, let both Central American bananas, the dollar bananas, and the Caribbean bananas come on. But that's even been opposed by Chiquita. They don't want that. And the thing about it is, when the Berlin Wall fell, Chiquita saw that this was going to be the opening of a gigantic market in Eastern Europe for bananas. and they overextended themselves. And that's the worst thing you can do with the stockholders. Because if you're bringing in 15 to 20% return on investment every year, and then suddenly you've got to justify to the stockholders that you're not bringing in that anymore, you know, why, you're in big trouble, you know. So that's why in why Chiquita is so insistent about that they should have the market to themselves, is so they can make up for this thing. And interestingly enough, Dole and Del Monte has both said, we can live with this, you know. Matter of fact, Dole even said that their market shares improved since the Europeans have put in the restrictions on the dollar banana. So it just comes back to Chiquita. Chiquita is the culprit here. And there's one thing I want to pick up on, if I can, in terms of as I said, naming names and taking addresses on the things. We've got to stop, I think, I'm not too fond of the term multinationals, because 50 of the largest 100 corporations in this world are American corporations. And when you look around and you see the corporate structure and who is more or less calling the shots, it's the American companies that are doing it, you know. It's our own companies. And we've got to make them accountable. You could go up to anybody on the street and say, who's Shell, and who's British Petroleum, and Exxon, and so forth, and they could tell you right away. If you went up on the street and said, who's Cargill, who's Dreyfus, who's Bungie, who's ADM, you know, most people wouldn't know, you know. And yet those companies have more of an impact on our daily lives than the oil companies have on it. So we've got to start naming names on that thing. When I said Cargill before, I didn't follow up on a point that I should have made. After Pierce was successful in getting this comparative advantage through, and then getting the Farm Bill in 1975 through that began to reduce the price that farmers got paid for what they did, there was still this problem of price supports, which was keeping a lot of our farmers alive. And that, the final nail in the coffin, was driven back in 1995 when we passed the so-called Freedom to Farm Bill, which has been a total disaster for our farmers. And that bill was, by and large, drafted by a man by the name of Daniel Amstutz, who also happened to be a vice president of Cargill. Now, both of these men, when they finished in the administration, and Amstutz, by the way, was also the man that basically laid out the blueprint for the Uruguay round of our trade talks in terms of agriculture. Both those men went back to the Cargill corporate structure. Who is one of the three major companies that ship meat to the Europeans? Well, the three major companies that control 81% of our meat shipments, or our beef packing in this country, are IBP, ConAgra, and Excel, which is a subsidiary of Cargill.
Go ahead.
Another question for Alcas.
She's asking, where did the hormones come from that are injected into the beef?
Yeah. Well, to begin, first of all, let me say that there has been a system worked out where they can detect what is hormone-fed beef and what is not hormone-fed beef. And that the Europeans say, all right, if you want to bring in hormone beef, added beef, simply label it. And guess what? We're pulling the same thing there that we're pulling on the genetically engineered stuff. We don't want it labeled. I say we, Cargill and those, don't want it labeled. Because as an official of Monsanto said a few years ago, if we start labeling food that it's genetically engineered, it's like giving it the kiss of death. So what the thing about it is in terms of one of the things, and I didn't find this out until just here recently, is one of the hormones that's given to the cattle is to simply keep them calm. Because when you get large numbers of animals together like that, they tend to get unruly, and you destroy the animal. The animal gets destroyed by the other animals and everything. So if we go back to the idea of in terms of sustainable agriculture, raising, for example, cattle on grass instead of feeding them so much corn and taking natural protein and to create one unit of unnatural protein, if we get back to that principle, but that's undermining the Cargills and the IBPs and the ConAgras, you know. They want these large farms where they can pack these things in. And if we ever need an example of the long-term disastrous effects of that, all we have to do is look at North Carolina right now. Because what we're seeing in North Carolina are these waste lagoons. And we're talking waste, folks. You know, a hog produces 8 times more waste than a human being. And right now, afloat in North Carolina, is there the waste that's equal to the human waste of the state of Texas. You know, and it's from these large hog farms that's set up in North Carolina, and the lagoons have, and we've been, and I can say this with some authority behind it, we've been saying that this was going to happen for the last 7-8 years, and now finally a few people are starting to listen, although again the media, today there was an Associated Press story finally coming around to saying what the hog lagoons are causing, the troubles are causing in North Carolina. Before, it's all been Floyd. A lot of the disaster that's going on in North Carolina now is not Mother Nature, it's mankind.
We invite you to join with other concerned members of civil society in their demonstrations against the World Trade Organization in Seattle from November 29th to December 3rd. People from all across America and around the world are coming to Seattle to oppose the anti-democratic WTO during its secret closed-door trade negotiations. For more information on the demonstrations, talks, and workshops held by civil society during the WTO negotiations, please call 1-877-STOP-WTO or visit the websites www.peopleforfairtrade.org and www.seattlewto.org.